you. Okay, last item of the day. Item number 11 is case number CPC 2019-6203-CA. The environmental case number is ENV 2019-6204-SE. The proposed code amendment is within all council districts. At this time, we are going to hear from either Neil or Phyllis. Or Tom. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. Case is on. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Tom Rothman from the Planning Department's Code Studies section. I'm joined with other members of Code Studies and a member of the Department of Cannabis Regulation. We're here to present the technical amendment to cannabis location restrictions, and which is a proposed ordinance updating the location rules for commercial cannabis activity that were adopted in 2017. I'm going to turn the bulk of this presentation over to the project manager, Neil Huffman.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Neil Huffman with City Planning Code Studies. This technical amendment to cannabis location restrictions is a proposed municipal code amendment prepared at the direction of the City Council. As the name implies, the changes are mainly technical in nature concerning the specifics of the minimum distancing requirements that cannabis businesses must maintain from sensitive sites, as well as the rules for grandfathering of existing medical marijuana dispensaries that previously operated under Prop D. We'll just review the background of the proposed amendment. As I just mentioned, as Tom mentioned, the city's existing location restrictions for commercial cannabis activity were adopted in 2017 as part of a comprehensive set of regulations for medical and recreational cannabis. Prior to this, the city regulated medical marijuana dispensaries through Prop D, which was essentially a moratorium on new dispensaries that allowed existing ones to continue operating in their existing locations, subject to various sensitive use distancing requirements and other restrictions. The 2017 restrictions, which were approved by this commission, adopted by the council, established eligible zones and minimum distancing requirements for various types of new commercial cannabis activity, and also allowed the existing medical marijuana dispensaries, the Prop D businesses, to continue operating in their existing Prop D compliant locations through the end of 2022. Following the 2017 adoption of the location restrictions, the City Council identified several policy items to be addressed through follow-up legislation, as well as a variety of clarifications and technical refinements. The ordinance that's before you today addresses several items from the council's instructions, including modifying some of the provisions relating to sensitive site distancing, as well as changing some of the rules relating to EMMDs. Just to clarify, the proposed ordinance does not address a number of other items from the council's instructions to city planning, including those relating to the rules for social consumption or on-site consumption of cannabis, temporary cannabis events, mixed light cultivation, or other substantive policy changes. These items are going to require some additional outreach and development, and we're planning to address them in future recommendations. Additionally, we just want to be clear that the proposed ordinance relates only to the location restrictions that this commission first considered in 2017. It doesn't address any other aspects of the city's cannabis regulatory framework, such as the licensing procedures, operating standards, undue concentration limits, or the social equity program. Those other aspects are under the jurisdiction of the Cannabis Regulation Commission and the Department of Cannabis Regulation. Just get into the some of the key provisions of the proposed ordinance. First, we'll review some of the changes to sensitive site distancing, the most significant of which is the change to how we define public parks. The 2017 location restrictions require new cannabis retailers to be located at least 700 feet from public parks. What is a public park? The term is defined to include city, county, state parks, but it also includes any land in the OS open space zone. And the OS zone does include some recreational facilities like bike trails, pedestrian trails that are not otherwise part of recognized public parks, but it also includes many parcels that have no recreational value. In particular, there are several arterial roadways, such as Venice Boulevard on the west side, Sherman Way in the valley, that include center medians that are mapped as parcels and zoned for open space, even though the median might not serve any recreational purpose. This, in some cases, this could preclude cannabis retailers from locating along entire commercial corridors. Accordingly, what the proposed ordinance does is it amends the definition of public park to include only those OS-zoned properties that contain actual park or recreation facilities, in addition to recognized city, county, and state parks. Additionally, with regard to parks in neighboring jurisdictions, currently parks in neighboring jurisdictions are not included in that definition of public park, and at least one adjoining city has reached out to ask that our sensitive site restrictions respect parks within in their jurisdiction that come close to ours. And so the ordinance expands the definition of public park to account for parks in neighboring jurisdictions. Some additional sensitive site distancing changes, one having to do with permanent supportive housing. The location restrictions currently, the same 700-foot distancing requirement also applies to permanent supportive housing sites. The existing location restrictions currently refer to a city planning case file that was pending at the time. The ordinance just updates that reference to refer to the current codified definition of permanent supportive housing in our zoning code. The ordinance also makes some changes to sensitive site dating. The existing location restrictions say that a business must be located the minimum distance from any sensitive sites that exist on the date the business receives its license. And this provision is challenging for DCR, to Department of Cannabis Regulation, to enforce. Licensed applicants are required to produce documentation of their compliance with the sensitive site distancing on the date that they apply. And because the significant time can elapse between that date and whenever DCR actually issues the license, a new daycare center can open, a new private school might possibly come in, and it can just be challenging to verify that information and what was there first. So what the ordinance does is it simplifies this process, requires that businesses observe the minimum distance from sites that exist on the date of application submittal. Additionally, at the request of DCR, the proposed ordinance modifies several of the criteria that are used to determine when an individual sensitive site came into existence. And those criteria are intended just to be easier for DCR to verify. With regard to existing medical marijuana dispensaries, or EMMDs, again, these establishments are allowed to stay in their existing Prop D compliant locations through the end of 2022. After that date, they're required to be in a location that complies with all of our all of the new restrictions that apply that also apply to new businesses in the current the 2017 location restrictions. What the proposed ordinance does is it modifies that to say that the EMMD needs to comply only with the zone requirements of the current location restrictions. The sensitive site distancing requirements would not apply. They could stay in their existing location as long as they comply with the Prop D distancing requirements, which are similar but not identical to the ones in the 2017 ordinance. In addition, the proposed ordinance relaxes a requirement for EMMDs to observe a restriction that was carried over from Prop D, which says that the EMMD may not use a door that is facing a residentially zoned property, can only be used as an emergency exit. And what the proposed ordinance does is it says the EMMD can use that door, but it has to limit access to employees, contractors, and vendors. Customers may not use that door for access. To briefly summarize our public outreach and participation efforts, we released a draft ordinance and a fact sheet to the public back in October. We posted the materials to our website, announced via our email list of interested parties that we have accumulated ever since our work on the 2017 location restrictions. We held a public hearing at Ron Deaton Auditorium on November 13th and also solicited comments in writing. The comments we received were largely supportive. Some commenters did request changes to the ordinance, but these changes mainly spoke to administrative challenges resulting from the DCR licensing process, or they spoke to more significant policy changes that really fall outside the scope of the direction that we received from the city council. So we're recommending that these issues be addressed administratively through DCR or as part of separate legislative efforts. And that's going to conclude the presentation. Thanks for your attention. We're happy to take your questions.
Thank you very much. Commissioners, do you have any technical questions at this time?
I guess this is a technical question. So, if a sensitive site comes online after the application, like how is that dealt with? Because it's still a sensitive site, so, you know.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner. Neil Huffman from City Planning. So I think you're speaking to one of the challenges that this ordinance is seeking to address, because sensitive sites that come online after the application date, technically under the current wording of that provision, those sites have to be accounted for by DCR in deciding whether to issue the license. And what this ordinance does by moving that cutoff date back to the date of application is it says it essentially locks everything in place on the date that the application is submitted, just so that there's, you know, information is easy to verify and just account for all the sensitive sites that are existing as of a certain date.
Right. I mean, I understand that from the applicant's point of view, it's helpful to not have a moving target. That makes sense to me. But for the people who are at the sensitive sites, like if they come online, like, you know, I know it's hard. This is very hard to regulate, obviously. So how do you deal, like if there's a school that comes that's built right next door, what, I mean, does a school, like, you know, they're just at their own peril because they decide to build next to a marijuana shop or, you know?
Can I suggest, I'm so sorry, I don't want to interrupt this line of questioning, but I have questions about this too.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that this is maybe a discussion that we can have after we hear from the public, and then we'll deliberate and discuss this, because I think we also have a council letter that speaks to this issue and we can discuss it further. So are you okay with that approach?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
I think I have a quick technical question.
Okay, great.
Or maybe
no,
not.
Go ahead.
Stop me if it's not. But I was just wondering if these public parks, that designation also includes community gardens?
As far as I know, it does not, unless the community garden was located in the open space zone and would come under that more broad definition. But as of now, community gardens are not specifically called out as a type of public park.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. This time I'm going to open up public comment. I have speaker cards from Madison Shockley, Kika Smith, Kika Keith, Johnny Suye, Raza Lawrence, and Jeff McConnell. I apologize for butchering names. Come on up. Whoever gets there first can start, and you will each have 1 minute to speak. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Madison Shockley. I'm a social equity applicant. I applied in phase 3, round 1, for a retail location, and there are a lot of issues in terms of zoning and location use that we need addressed as well. And I noticed in one of the slides said that these don't apply to social equity at all. And I just want to say that hopefully you guys can make considerations that would apply to us, because we have a lot of these issues coming down the pipeline. And if you all are prepared to deal with those, that would be great. Generally, the recommendations I support, but just would like them to apply not just to pre-ICOs, but generally to all applicants coming online. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Kika Keith. When Measure M was passed in 2017, there was significant outpouring of votes due to the inclusion of the community reinvestment and also priority processing for members of my community who have been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. I'm one of those individuals, a single mother, seeking this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to achieve self-sufficiency in this industry. It's been 2 years, and policies have not been administered that give us any type of priority. Instead, the existing medical marijuana dispensaries continue to receive exemptions and prioritization. I ask that any exemptions, specifically the last two items that are relaxed for EMMDs, should also not be specific just to EMMDs if you're going to pass it, but that it should also include the upcoming social equity applications. We've been waiting online. I've held a property for 18 months, and I'm continuously seeing policy shifted and changed on their behalf, but I'd ask that you address that and also on-site consumption, because that's very important
Thank
in
you.
Our community as we're evicted
Thank
out of
you.
Properties
that is your time.
For not having, not being able to consume on-site. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, staff and commission. My name is Johnny Sage. I'm part of the group Cannabis Equity Retail Association. We represent the 100 invoice applicants as part of round one of phase 3. And I'd like to start off by thanking the Planning Commission and staff for the continuous work to better implement this program. We are in full support of the actions being taken to provide economic opportunity for the victims of the war on drugs. We advocate for preserving the legislation that will provide this economic opportunity for the victims. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Raza Lawrence from the McGowan and Lawrence Law Office, and we've been helping many social equity applicants and their business partners navigate through the storefront licensing process. We've seen a lot of frustration and anger from applicants over the delays in issuing the licenses and the harm that this is causing to social equity applicants, many of whom have locked down properties for many months on reliance on the city's system and feel that they're misled. And we've been working with the Teamsters group to form the Social Equity Coalition, a nonprofit to advocate for the interests of all the 802 social equity applicants who have pending applications. And what we're asking is for the city to loosen the zoning requirements and start issuing more licenses. And specifically, we want the social equity applicants to be treated on the same level as the pre-ICOs and be given the same treatment, not be treated as second-class citizens. We're also asking for the city to issue delivery licenses to everyone who's waiting on their pending applications, and to allow the PCN undue concentration process for people to apply through that if they're knocked out of consideration by another dispensary through no fault of their own or another sensitive use. Give them a chance to find another location or allow it to get approved by the city council. Don't continue to inflict harm on all these
Thank
social
you.
Equity applicants. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, Jeff McConnell. I represent several EMMDs in the Los Angeles area. wanted to remind this commission that you are not approving a code that goes to the zoning code. This is ordinances that reside in the business section of the LAMC, and so it is slightly different than one might expect. Further, there were some additional changes that were requested in the staff report, decided to push those off to a later date. They are items that are to create consistency between the building code and these location restrictions, which again are not a part of the zoning code. One is for the ability for on-site retail within the MR zones. Retail is allowed in the MR zone as long as it is an accessory use to another use. So somebody is, you know, having a beer dispensary, they are also allowed to sell a portion of their space for retail. We'd like to see that change allowed, as well as currently the city permits these as hydroponic enterprises, which is allowed in the commercial zone.
Sorry,
so cultivation, manufacturing,
time.
And non-volatile manufacturing should be allowed in commercial
Thank
zones. Thank you.
Laura Potter, Sarah Armstrong, and Ian. Once I've called your name, please come right up. Thank you. Welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Ian McMillan. I'm a social equity applicant, Tier 1, and I ask that these recommendations get broadened to also include social equity applicants as well. We face similar issues. Myself and others have been holding properties for months and years, and I think it should accommodate applicants in addition to EMMDs.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Laura Potter. I'm also a Phase 3 Round 1 applicant. My concerns are similar to those that have previously been stated here today by the other applicants. I stand here too asking that you give the same leniencies that you are preparing to potentially give to EMDSs that you make it available to all social equity applicants as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sarah Armstrong. I'm a Director of Industry Affairs for Americans for Safe Access and the Policy Chair for the Southern California Coalition. Two of the items in your ordinance come from the SCC. The door issue is absolutely essential because if you do not approve the use of these back doors, they're remains a big conflict between state and local law. In terms of open space, in 2017, the intention was to provide open space, but not to expand it out so that traffic meridians with grass or landscape bus stop would become sensitive uses. These are important because we have many, many new retailers coming in, at least 100, and hopefully many more, and we need to have this clarity. Also, first in time, first in right is very important to us, so we do support clarity on the issue of schools, parks, and when those items manifest, we need that kind of clarity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's the last speaker card I had on this item, so I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. Staff, is there anything you'd like to respond to?
Sorry, before you do, what's EMMDs? Sorry.
The EMMDs are existing medical marijuana dispensaries. These have gone by a number of different names over the years, pre-ICO businesses or Prop D businesses. These are basically the businesses that predate the city's moratorium on new medical marijuana dispensaries and that were given priority processing under the terms of Prop M, which was the ballot measure that authorized this whole regulatory structure.
Thank you.
And I think Jason would like to add something.
Jason Klein from Assistant Executive Director for the Department of Cannabis Regulation. Just a few things to clarify is one of the things mentioned on Neil's slides was the social equity program. I do want to let everybody in the room know that these
I'm so sorry, we can barely hear you. Can you speak a little bit more loudly?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things I wanted to clarify for everybody in the room is the requested changes would also assist our social equity applicants who would be submitting applications both as part of Phase 3, which was last September, as far as social equity applicants on a go-forward basis. The only provision in the code changes that are specific to the existing medical marijuana dispensaries or the EMMDs is there's a provision in the code that allows for those EMMDs to be grandfathered through December 31st, 2022. For under Proposition D, the distancing restrictions were 1,000 feet from a school and 600 feet from other sensitive uses. Under the new code, all sensitive uses are 700 feet. So there's a number of existing businesses that are located between 600 and 700 feet of a park or a library that were allowed to operate there for years, sometimes decades, that would be forced to relocate. And one of the issues right now is businesses are not allowed to relocate. So basically, they're going to lose their license at the end of 2022, or they're going to have to walk away from other activities that would not be allowed at that location any longer. As part of our initial vetting for the existing medical marijuana dispensaries, we did verify that all of them were compliant with the Prop D distancing restrictions before they were issued temporary approval, and the businesses that were not compliant with those restrictions were required to relocate, and we had at least half a dozen businesses relocate due to distancing from schools, so we've already made them move at least once. One of the other things is there was a mention about the on-site retail for the MR zone. That's not something the department would be opposed to. Basically, that would streamline the process with building and safety as well as the fire department. So all of these businesses were pretty much ignored for about a decade. So a lot of the tenant improvements that were done at these locations were all unpermitted tenant improvements. So we're running into issues now with businesses trying to actually legitimize those tenant improvements, come into compliance with building code, fire code. And we also have a contract with the County Department of Public Health that will be before our council pretty soon. So they'll have to comply with public health code as well. So all of these businesses are struggling to come into compliance with all of these various codes. And because of the discrepancies between the codes, they're unable to do so right now. So that's part of the reason why we look to for your body to accept some of these technical amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Neil Huffman from City Planning. I'd just like to add with regard to the MR zone comment, our instructions from council did not ask us to look at any new zones, so that's why expanding the range of zones that are available was not part of our recommendations. But to mirror Jason's comment, we would not be opposed to revisiting that if the commission decides that's what it wants to do.
Thank you, commissioners. Who wants to kick us off?
Dana, before you do, could you repeat that last part? This is David Ambrose. Sorry, Dana. Will you say that last part again? What is in our purview?
I believe you said they don't object. They wouldn't object if we decided to expand into the MR zone issue that the member of the public brought up.
Thank you.
I have two questions for you. One, under the definition of public park that's in the draft ordinance, section 105.01, the changes, identify open spaces, parks, playgrounds, etc., under specific jurisdictions because of the distance. And you mentioned in your opening comments that there was at least one neighboring jurisdiction that asked to be included. I'm guessing that was Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, because that's the only one other than City of LA and County. But I'm wondering, why not list the other neighboring municipalities? For example, we circle Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, Culver City. We don't circle it entirety, but I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to have that same buffer. If there's a park in Culver City, there's not a wall there. So
thank you, Commissioner Perlman. Neil Huffman with City Planning. So for the record, the city that reached out to request that provision be added was actually Rancho Palos Verdes. The reason it's drafted the way it is because we don't know what if there are going to be future incorporations or divisions of our neighboring cities, and so we didn't want to tie ourselves down by naming specific jurisdictions, and so we've kind of tried to anticipate this future occurrences that we can't account for just by saying any adjoining city, adjoining county, recreation and parks district, community services district, etc.
I just read the next line. I read these things for a living, so I should probably read a little more carefully. But it's strange to call out a number of operator managers and then say or anything adjacent. If someone was litigating that, that could become an issue, because why didn't you call it out? If you call out one, then you're kind of expected to call out all. So your interpretation, your intention here is that the Parks and Recreation Agency of an adjacent city or county includes all those other municipalities that are adjacent to Los Angeles. And I would suggest maybe that the language, instead of an adjacent city or county, say of any city or county adjacent to the city of Los Angeles. My other comment, and this is in response to a letter we received from Councilman Rue, looking at Section 105.03, subsection B, which is section 4 of your proposed ordinance. Is that the right one? I think that's the right one. I understand, and the councilman's comment, I think, is well taken, that if there is a park or a school that has been approved, for example, a school that's been approved by this body but has not yet started operation, because sometimes it takes quite a bit of time, that should still be considered a sensitive use, don't you think?
Jason, would you like to address this?
Jason Klein for the Department of Cannabis Regulation. So when we're doing our sensitive use review, we're looking at the sensitive uses that are known. So if permits have been pulled, the lot has been properly zoned, and the intent is for it to be there, then it would be considered a parking or park facility. One of the examples is off of one of our freeways. There was a median that was basically rezoned, and that property was transferred to the Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy, and it was basically a walk-through park with a bike path. So for our purposes, it was deemed a sensitive use. However, there's a number of sensitive uses where there's a desire to develop lots that are currently zoned commercial or manufacturing, where the project hasn't been approved, the necessary actions to properly zone the property haven't occurred, there's no building permits to actually do improvements on that, and then it's kind of at a point of time of where is that decision really a decision, where a sensitive use is created, and that's what we take into consideration.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think the language, though, in the proposed ordinance is not consistent with that, because the language says, and began to operate.
So
if you've pulled a permit, you have not yet technically begun to operate? I mean, I would agree with you. It seems to me that if a permit has been pulled or a project has been permitted, then that should qualify as a sensitive use, whether or not they have actually opened for business, if as it were.
Correct. So,
understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So for began to operate is really when that use would otherwise be allowed at that location, or when the necessary permits were actually pulled to facilitate that building or piece of land actually being used for that purpose.
Yeah, again, I think reasonable minds would view begun to operate differently. When we look at for other projects here, and granted, I don't do cannabis regulations, but when we do projects here, we look at various timelines, the pulling of a permit, the issuance of a certificate of occupancy, something of that. Those are hard and fast, clear timelines. So it seems to me that language could be changed to say to key into whether or not a permit has been pulled or it has been zoned.
May I make a recommendation? This is Samantha Millman. Could we just add something that, like, for the purposes of this ordinance,
begun to operate,
the term
shall mean.
Yeah, da-da-da-da-da shall mean, and then spell out what we mean by that, just so it's, because if we leave it broad, and that's how you're interpreting it now, but you leave, and the people with that sort of internal knowledge leave, or someone decides to interpret it differently later, I think the more specific we can be about what we are proposing, the less uncertainty we create down the line.
So we're dealing with a dual licensing system where it's both the local jurisdiction as well as the state law. So where possible, we've tried to mirror the language the state uses so that we're internally consistent. So when we're making our review and doing our local authorization letters and handing people off to the state for state licensure, when they come back with their provisional licenses and we finish up the process, we're kind of at the same point in time, so everybody gets to the same analysis. So
yeah, I appreciate that. It just seems to me, if I was one of these thousands of applicants going through and has to do this certification, I could go on to Zemus and I could see how something is zoned. I could go on to building and safety and see if permits are pulled, and then I could sign something. If I looked at language that said began to operate, I'd say, I don't know what that means, right? And clearly the councilman doesn't either, because that's why they wrote that letter. So reasonable minds might view that differently. So I think Samantha's suggestion is a good one and will give us more clear, defined parameters.
Yep.
That's it for me, thanks.
Thank you. Mark?
So I think the goal of this conversation, and as evidenced by what Commissioner Perlman just brought up, is about consistency and clarity. And to that end, I think there were a couple good points brought up. And one was addressed. I just want to be clear about this. So the way this ordinance is written, this will apply to social equity candidates and applicants.
That is correct.
Okay.
So the issue with our social equity applicants is the council adopted a policy to process applications at a 2-to-1 ratio, and currently the department does not have the capacity to process all of the eligible social equity applicant applications that are pending because of the soft cap that was adopted. So in order to address that, we would need council to reconsider the cap or make adjustments to allow us to basically implement the social equity intent of the program, regardless of whether or not the stop cap is reached, but that's not something that's before you today.
Okay. Yeah, it's just important that that is clear and that it applies to all applicants. Again, on the issue of consistency, there was the point brought up about retail in the MR zone. Can you discuss that? You said you're open to it, but can we come to some sort of agreement about how to word that or how to add that?
I think we'd probably want a little time to review all the relevant provisions, because the MR zone, that's a manufacturing restricted, and to the extent that retail is allowed there, it's very limited. And so I don't know if you have any additional insight here, but
Arthi Varma with the planning department, if I could jump in. I would just clarify Neil's earlier point, I think, when he was referencing that. That would be outside the scope of this particular amendment, but I think his expression that we'd be open to considering it. We're going to be coming back with some future amendments after we do some additional outreach that could be added to the scope of work for that amendment.
And will that come back to us, or will that be in the deliberations at council level?
That would come back to you because it concerns modifications to the location restrictions that were originally approved by this commission.
Okay. And similarly, there was a discussion about cultivation in a manufacturing zone as well. I think that's something else that needs to be considered that maybe wasn't addressed the first time around. Do you have a comment?
I'm sorry, I was conferring with Jason. Could you repeat your question?
I was talking about similar to retail that was brought up, cultivation was as well. And I'd like to just see that kind of, I'd like to see all this stuff considered as this is being built, right? So if you're saying that retail is something you're going to deliberate over a little bit more, and in the next version, that's something that'll be, we'll see, and it'll be considered. That's great. But the other side of it would be cultivation. And again, a lot of this is lining up the wording here with some existing policy, whether it's DBS or otherwise. So that's just important, I think, for us to consider as we move forward in this next iteration of what comes before us.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, Neil Huffman, City Planning. Just with regard to cultivation, I think along the same lines as retail in the MR zone, it's not something we address in any of our outreach efforts on this ordinance. I think as Arthi pointed out, we have this other more substantive policy related ordinance that we'll be developing, and that'll have a little bit more robust outreach effort around it, just to deal with some of the more inherently weighty changes that are included as part of that. So we think it's probably more appropriate to address it in that context as part of that. More
no, I think that's great because it needs to be done correctly. But again, those are two. I'm sure there's others that'll be brought up. Issues that need to be considered in order to get this right, and for there to be consistency across rules and departments, and so that people who are applicants, have the correct information. I think that's really important. We saw that earlier with a couple. Public comments, that I think you addressed around the social equity piece, just making sure that this whole program is new. I know there's kinks being worked out, but the more that the language can be consistent and what's communicated to the public can be consistent, the better for everybody. So I would just ask that those two issues get considered as you're making a more robust ordinance with language that addresses some of the issues that are going to be brought up around the dais. All right. That's it for me.
Thank you. Veronica?
I just wanted a little bit more clarification on the back door about, it can now be used by deliveries and the employees, but not by customers. Is that right? I was just wondering, does it also spell out consequences if it is used by customers, or kind of who regulates that? How can that be regulated?
So Jason Cleed for the Department of Cannabis Regulation. The use of the back door by customers would be something that would violate our rules and regulations. So the department, through an administrative process, would address that. When the city had basically a prohibition on new businesses, the city passed a law that only allowed for one entrance to be used, and that's inconsistent with building code and fire code. So as now we're trying to bring people into the regulated marketplace and get them to adhere to all the regulations, it provides to be a challenge, but to the extent that our rules and regulations can address the use of the doors, that's something that our commission will address.
Okay, thank you. And just this other question that was brought up by someone in the audience regarding on-site consumption, is that something that will also be further discussed in the follow-up that we keep hearing about? Is that something that we'll hear more about?
Correct. That would be one of the marquee items to be addressed as part of that future ordinance. That's in our direction from council to address that specific topic.
And while all this is happening, the licenses keep being given out. This is not kind of slowing down any of the process, right?
So DCR has accepted applications since January of 2018. We have yet to issue a single license. So one of the issues is all of the necessary tools the department hasn't been granted yet, and because of the fact that state law and local law have been amended multiple times, we have a situation where applicants are in different phases of the licensing process, but at some point in time, they're going to have to become compliant with full annual license. So some of those challenges are like the DOJ resolution for people to do the live scan process. Mm-hmm. You know, phase one applicants were granted temporary approval based on the fact that they were an existing medical marijuana dispensary. So all of those businesses still have to go through building code, fire code, public health, live scan results, and everything else before we can even make a recommendation to our commission. And it's been over 2 years for a lot of those folks. So that's part of the concern for, you know, looking at the sensitive uses at the time the application is accepted by the department, as opposed to the time of licensure. And even for folks that are coming down the pipeline for phase three, it will be a minimum of 6 to 12 months before the applications are deemed complete because of all of the hurdles that they have to cross with the multiple agencies.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you.
I have a question about the existing medical marijuana dispensaries, and if approved, will that actually limit future applications? I know that we're not discussing the social equity program and its future applicants, but I am interested in hearing about how, if this is approved, does it actually prioritize existing medical marijuana dispensaries? Is there a cap? And I'm not sure about if there is a cap, if there's like distancing from one another, and if this is going to be grandfathered in until the end of 2022, will that mean that potential applicants, future applicants through the social equity program will be less spots will be available or less locations will be available to them?
Jason Klein for the Department of Cannabis Regulation. So the council amended local law to prevent the existing medical marijuana dispensaries from relocating. So basically, they're locked into their current locations, and many of them were looking to secure a compliant location in advance of the December 31st, 2022 deadline. So basically, it forces those EMMDs to stay in place. That gives our social equity applicants the opportunities to find compliant locations and submit applications for those compliant locations and get vested. But what that does is it would preclude a EMMD later on from finding or possibly securing a location that's compliant before the December 31st, 2022 deadline. So by allowing the sensitive uses that were in place for Proposition D that they've already been vetted against to be allowed, it would allow for those businesses to stay where they're currently located. And that means that there's more space available for social equity applicants. And it also means that they're not going to potentially knock out other applicants down the road by moving when we're going through a licensure phase.
Great. Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you. Karen, do you have any further questions, or were your questions answered?
I believe they were answered. We have this letter from the council office, which actually is kind of interesting and seems like a reasonable adjustment. I looked at it after you mentioned it.
I think that's what Dana was speaking to, is we were talking about adding some language to define what we meant by began to operate.
Right. So, yeah, I think we're good.
Thank you. David?
I'm still trying to figure this out in terms of the two separated trains that are coming down the tracks. So to me, it seems as if the other one should be heard first, and then we can understand the implications of these decisions. A lot of those seem to have crossover, so I think we're seeing these out of order. I think that other policy list, if approved as is or conceived, could have unintended or intended consequences with our decisions we're asked to make today. I'm not sure about that, but that's how it seems to me after reviewing this. So I might suggest we reverse the order. Those decisions have far-reaching consequences in a way that I don't know what the implications will be as we adjust sensitive uses and the like. So curious about that. Could be wrong on that. Don't think I am, but curious staffs. But let me get a few things out there and see how you want to tackle this. When we talked about the OS, open space category, you mentioned that things like bike trails might be included. Is that still the case if we were to approve the action as today?
Yes, that is still the case. The
I'll
language
take a hardcore yes, just to get us to where we're going.
Yes.
I don't think they should be. I think, you know, one thing in reviewing this and sitting with cannabis for a few years now, seems like we should be focused on recreation facilities targeting children, not just broad recreation facilities. It doesn't really make sense to me that the West Side bike trail along the Expo line should prohibit cannabis for the entire length of the bike trail. That doesn't make any sense to me. It seems like we would be really talking about playgrounds with children, is how my mind goes to. When you spoke, and I'm raising all this because I think this needs more time to marinate. I don't think it's ready for action today. When you talked about Palos Verdes, what I'm concerned about is our neighbors building a wall and having all the cannabis on our side of the wall, and then all the wonderful residents of these other adjacent jurisdictions coming over for their use of our liberal laws while they outlaw it, essentially. I don't like that, and unless there's reciprocity, I'm not interested in it. I would add reciprocity as a requirement for that benefit. I don't want LA to be unfairly burdened with cannabis usages. Not that I think it's a problem or a good or an evil, but I don't like that. It kind of seems odd to me. Because a lot of jurisdictions have different definitions of what is open space. Is it our definitions in their jurisdictions that we apply, or do they tell us that it's a sensitive use? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. We would essentially rely on them to designate a piece of land as a
Olive Branches Palos Verdes has now been designated.
Yeah. I can let Jason speak to, do you want to speak to any more details of how to implement that provision or
I guess okay. I'm not willing to support that if the neighboring jurisdiction's telling us what counts. I would want more specificity because I just, you know, dealing with some of the issues we have, for example, around the inequitable distribution of affordable housing, some jurisdictions really, you know, dragging their feet on providing it, or I just don't like that idea where we'd have to accept the neighboring jurisdiction's definition of what a sensitive use is. I also wonder, you know, when I look at things like the San Gabriel Mountains or, you know, large swaths of the county that are parks. So are we then, so anything within 700 feet of that is excluded? Like I'm thinking of, you know, San Gabriel Mountains, but that may or may not be pertinent here. But do you understand my question?
Yes. So national parks, not included in the definition of public park, but county parks, state parks, certainly, yes, that 700 foot would apply.
I think that raises equity issues for me, as a lot of poor black and brown neighborhoods don't have access to those large facilities. Those are disproportionately ringing around the city in places like upper parts of the valley. So I would have issues of concern there, where a lot of poor poor communities don't get the benefit of yet another exclusion to keep away from. So let's have more cannabis uses in communities that are already overburdened with other things. So if we're doing cleanup on open space, I would want even more cleanup on open space where we look at issues of equity like that. I think we should wrestle a little bit more with what we mean by open space. For me, it's not just a landscaped median or a median. It's also the disproportionate impact of the allocation of open space in our city. We're inherently bypassing something like this, which is a refinement. I understand we already passed this. Missing an opportunity to maybe correct an unintended consequence, in my opinion. I don't think this goes far enough in doing some of the cleanup that I would like to see, and I also believe that the other bag of items that are working its way through the process could have implications with this decision, and I would really personally like to see those things decided first, and a little bit more clarity on issues like cross-jurisdictional definitions and the equitable distribution of green space. Maybe this is an opportunity to correct some of those unintended consequences. Those are my thoughts. Thank you, Chair. Oh, I apologize. Nope, you answered it. Someone else asked it. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could respond a little more accurately to your question about the definitional issues, the exact wording of the provision is if the site is under the control, operation, or management of the Parks and Recreation Agency of an adjacent city or county. So I don't know if that provides the specificity that you're seeking, but That's
it,
the
it
wording.
Certainly is more clear for me. I appreciate that, and it does limit it, but it still stands for me that I'm troubled by that. Ranch, like, I'm making it up, but Rancho's Palos Verdes has a lot more green space than we do per capita, and it bears out the same way, as do these other cities that have more restrictive zoning. I just think this is an equity conversation with our surrounding jurisdictions having much more low-slung cities and much more park space per capita. I just have, I'm not sure how I fall on that, but I appreciate that does clear it up more.
Thank you.
I'm going to dovetail on that, what David just brought up. Is this neighboring municipal jurisdiction situation, is this reciprocal?
Reciprocity would have to be decided by the legislative body of that adjacent jurisdiction, many of which currently do not have any kind of regulatory or licensing program for commercial cannabis activity at all.
So what is the impetus of us doing it?
Good neighbors.
The reason it's included in this ordinance is because it's part of our instructions from the city council.
Right, but the neighboring part?
Correct.
I'm trying to understand what is the benefit for us if it's a neighboring part.
Vahid, I think, Dana, I think part of the policy reason behind it, although I was obviously not a member of council, is that if you're trying to keep a buffer around parks, and there is a park that is in a neighboring city, the policy reason is because you don't want a cannabis store right next to a park where kids are. And if that park happens to be a neighboring city, but it does not come over the border into Los Angeles, to allow in Los Angeles a cannabis retailer to open right at the border that's 10 feet away from that park,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is still
in, like buying fireworks
still
on the way to Vegas.
The policy
yeah.
reason of having the cannabis, because you will then have that cannabis property adjoining a park. I think that's why it's set up like that.
So we're guessing. We're trying to read their mind on why they do it. I mean, I'm a little, I kind of get that, but I'm a little confused by it because we have no control over what the neighboring jurisdiction does, because they could, you know, down the line, just like our positions could all change. Someone else new comes in, someone else new coming into Rancho Palos Verdes and say, it's fine, put a cannabis dispensary right next to a park. And then, so now we have a rule that limits it, you know, close to our border, but they don't necessarily have the same rule. I just a little confused on why we would have something like that if it's not reciprocal.
Yeah,
but
just on this issue, Chair, I don't ever recall basing policy on neighboring jurisdictions like this before, because it's a little bit like building a house on quicksand as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
Period. And then B, I certainly wouldn't vote for it unless it's reciprocal. You know, I don't know why we would put our citizens at a disadvantage, however you conceive of it.
I look at this differently. This is Samantha Millman. I'm going to take my turn.
I have other things, but you can.
And I have one too. I just want to.
Well, just responding to this, then I'll throw it back to Vahid. And, I think we need to make policy based on policy, not on what everyone else is doing. So if we think that it is in the public interest to distance these facilities from parks, whether they're our parks or someone else's parks, what we're saying is it's a policy that we need to distance these things from parks. I don't think it matters who that park belongs to. I would fight the premise of it being a threat to the park, but that's a whole different discussion for a different day. So I think, you know, that we might want to think of it that way instead of worrying about what other jurisdictions are doing. What we're saying is we have a policy that keeps a distance from parks because we believe that that is in the public necessity or the public good. And so whether that park is in Los Angeles or Beverly Hills or in Palos Verdes or in West Hollywood, it's a park.
Okay. The other part, going back to a conversation that Dana brought up and the letter from Councilmember Rue, just for I want some clarification here on what are we talking about changing the timeline so it's no longer what is in use from application to what is in actual pipeline of a permit that's been approved?
Jason Kleen again for the Department of Cannabis Regulation. So all of our existing Phase 1 and Phase 2 applicants have some form of limited grandfathering for the applications that they submitted. So what we're trying to do is get clarity on the code so that our Phase 3, our general licensing applicants who haven't been part of the process, understand what standard they'll be held to, and that standard is comparable with the standard that was used for the Phase 1 and the Phase 2 applicants. So right now, when we were doing our initial vetting to determine eligibility for further processing, we were looking at that snapshot in time when the application was before us, and then we were measuring it against the distancing restrictions. So those businesses, whether or not they're grandfathered through 2022 or they're not even subject to distancing restrictions from parks, schools, libraries, is already in the code. So our Phase 2 applicants are all non-retail. So those businesses only have to be 600 feet from a school. There is no consideration for parks. So this really, these cleanup is to help applicants that will apply, not the folks that are already in the pipeline.
Right. So the applicants who do apply, is you're saying that there it's, are we, are, I'm saying that we should change it so it's to what is permitted, not necessarily what's already in use. Is that something that I thought we agreed upon? Is that not something that is that?
I think that was the language Samantha was suggesting. Is that if we define began to operate, General right. was referring that began to operate. I think came in is in a California code. They were trying to be consistent. So if we say for purposes of this ordinance, began to operate is when the property is either zoned as such or a permit has been pulled.
So,
but we haven't had that conversation around the diocese yet, have we? Or have we committed to that is what I'm trying to figure out.
I think that's kind of the discussion we've been having as we go around, okay. which people seem to be in line with.
Okay. That's it. As long as that I wanted yeah. to put my two cents that I am committed to that even though.
Yeah.
Thank you.
For the purpose of like park, we could clearly come up with a term for operate because mm-hmm. that information is then submitted to the Department of City Planning and then they record that information in ZEMIS. So we can pick, you know, a point in time. Other sensitive uses like permanent supportive housing, there's a more robust review that's done. So just having a permanent supportive housing unit does not make it a sensitive use. It also has to have on-site services. And given the fact that, you know, those agencies get funding from various sources, there may be periods of time where there's a break in services provided or the facility wasn't actually built out to provide services and it's not until 3, 4, 5 years later that they begin to offer services. So the goal for the term operate would be to limit it to whatever definition in the code you wanted that definition to apply to, because in general terms it would be almost impossible to apply it systematically to all of the various definitions of the code because all of them have different nuances as it relates to the different nuts and bolts that are required to make it a sensitive use.
If I could respond to that. So, I mean, looking at our advanced calendar, we have a charter school coming up to us, I think next month or the month after. So, I mean, that would be a sensitive use. But if before that comes to us, a permit is issued, then what happens to the charter school that's already submitted a plan, right? So that's what I'm trying to figure out is, yes, I hear what you're saying, but a lot of pieces in this city move and no one really necessarily speaks with one another. So I think having it as being narrowed down to when it's approved, it could be that it gets approved or it's in use. And then this person is going down the pipeline to build a charter school and that gets approved and they only find out later that there was a cannabis permit issued as well. So I'm trying to find some balance in that clarity of timelines.
I'm going to make a suggestion here because I feel like we're playing a little bit of ping pong. I think what the desire of this commission is, based on what you're hearing, is that we need some further definition in what it means to begin to operate. And I think that that's going to require you guys kind of going back and putting your heads together and looking at this a little bit. So I think the best course forward is actually to continue this item. Based on the discussions we've had today, I think staff has some clear direction as to the items that need to come back to us for further clarification and further ideas.
Can I just add my 2 cents before you put a bow on it for today? I want to just respond, just to add a little bit to what you said in terms of our, I mean, I love this discussion because this really is a policymaking process. We had a policy, it's working, we can see where it's not working, and we're, you know, trying to iterate to make it work better. But I think in terms of this issue of whether we include other parks or not, I think that our challenge in Los Angeles as you know, focused on quality of life for our residents, the nature of Los Angeles is it's a very porous city. Not, I mean, it's unusual in general in terms of cities, the way the city developed. You know, we've got, you know, all of these crazy boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's very, you know, we have to take other jurisdictions into account just because the way the city has grown up. The other issue is in terms of this issue with children, I mean, I feel like, you know, marijuana is kind of like cigarette smoke. So, you know, some people are sensitive to it, even if they're not children. So really thinking about you know, a hiking trail, people are exerting a lot of energy to like run by and take a whiff of marijuana smoke might not be the most comfortable situation. So, you know, I feel like open space defined broadly is, again, thinking about it like cigarette smoke and, you know, kind of another dimension higher because you can get a contact high. So, you know, just really being sensitive to all people and whatever sensitivities they have with regard to, you know, this medicinal or mind-altering physical or biological altering substance. So that, I mean, that I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. This is Samantha Millman, just to kind of build on that and hopefully move us in a direction of closing. I just want to be careful because we are not contemplating, we don't have any on-site consumption in the city of Los Angeles right now. I believe it is actually not legal to consume marijuana on the premises of anything.
So that, not in a park. So why are we talking about this?
Because there are people that believe that selling marijuana close to a park is a danger to that park. Which is interesting to me because when I drive by these marijuana facilities, I see no one in the parking lot. It is, you know, other than a security guard. But I drive by liquor stores and see people loitering outside doing all sorts of things. So, you know, I actually...
I mean, I can't tell you how much I smell marijuana these days compared to when it wasn't.
Yeah. But anyway, different discussion for a different day. I think for the purposes of this ordinance, what you're hearing from the commission, I think, is a desire to have it brought back to address some of these issues in greater depth, put your heads together, and come up with some proposals that address the issues we've discussed today. Do we need to have a date certain for this, or can we just continue it?
Arthi Varma, I would not a date certain, so we have sufficient time to go back and think about what kinds of changes need to be done.
Thank we don't you. Lose jurisdiction, do we, in any date pending?
Yeah,
I know you're good. I will check with city attorney, but I don't believe so.
No, you don't lose jurisdiction.
Then I would move continuance and date unknown. David Ambrose.
Samantha Millman, second. Cecilia, we have a first and a second. Will you please call for the vote?
Commissioner Ambrose?
Yes.
Commissioner Millman?
Yes.
Commissioner Learn?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Mitchell?
Yes.
Commissioner Padilla-Campos?
Yes.
Commissioner Perlman?
Yes.
Commissioner Corsan?
Yes.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned at 2:01.